Stoveleg Media, igniting conversation.
This is True Crime Cast. Jamie is always here with John. What's happening, buddy?
Dude, it's a day in December. It's my son's birthday. Really
indeed.
Excited, man.
Happy birthday to your son. That's exciting. Birthdays are fun. I miss it when I used to enjoy mine.
Yeah, you're in your, what, 50s now?
Something like that.
No, I'm kidding.
You're feels early, like the 60s today.
Early 40s, man. And yeah, this 2024 is going to be a big year for me. I'm going to join the 40 Club next year, so...
Welcome to the club. We appreciate you joining.
I got to get my fish oil tablets lined up. I feel like those are crucial. Don't take medical advice from us, by the way.
Never.
I'm living hard over here. Dude, how are you doing, though?
I'm good. Just an interesting note. Last night, I let my daughter listen to our original True Crime Cast intro.
Okay.
The really dark one with the AI voice saying True Crime Cast really deep.
She like it or hate it?
She was like, wow, that's some awful AI. I was like, that was 6 years ago, bro. That was like cutting edge.
Yeah.
Not so much now.
I love our old school intro. It's just nostalgic. And I mean, really, can you believe we've been doing this for 6 years?
No, not at all.
Like I mentioned, it was my kid's birthday. He was under 10 years old when we started.
Insane.
Speaking of time flies, we've also been doing Patreon for... You know, about that whole time, I feel like we started just a few months after we started releasing episodes. We have 6 years, nearly 6 years of content over on Patreon. Speaking of that, we have a new Patreon member I want to thank, and that is Lori. Came in at the $3 a month level, which is the base level, and that gets you access to all of our bonus episodes each and every month. You get a new episode on the first of the month, and that's exclusive to Patreon members.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. You also get early and ad-free content, and we've been busy. We've made Left on Dead. We created Paradigm this year. We always release those early to our Patreon members for feedback. So 2024, if you're looking for something to do, join Patreon. It's awesome.
We're planning at least season two of both of those shows for next year, so you can get in early on those for sure. But we really appreciate you that are already over there. Also, big thanks to those leaving reviews. This comes from JordyPop12. If you love country accents, people who are wholesome and true crime, you'll love Jamie and John's podcast. I've only been listening for a couple of months on Spotify because I recently got into true crime, and they've made it such a great experience. They go so in-depth and share their opinions while also sharing each side of why they could see how these things happen. I'm thinking about joining their Patreon as well. I'd love to meet them someday. Thanks for keeping my hour-long drives to and from work entertaining. Keep up the great work. Thank you, Jordy Pop.
Jordy, thank you. And, you know, I would love to be able to do, like, meet and greets. I think that would be awesome. Jamie and I hope it's okay to talk about this. We're going to be in a play this weekend and next weekend in Madison County, Kentucky, the Spotlight Theater. Your boys are going to be in A Christmas Carol.
Yeah.
Jamie is Bob Cratchit. I am the ghost of Christmas Present. And man, I'm pumped. So buy your tickets to that. Come meet us. Let us know you're there.
It's a dinner show.
Yeah.
Come eat with us, talk with us, and John will be maniacally laughing as the ghost. It'll be good.
Yeah.
Also, thanks to K Flats 00. I started with the Timothy McVeigh episode and went from there. I enjoy the information without anecdotal diatribes, but more than that, I appreciate the lack of swearing. Most of the true crime podcasts swear quite a bit, and I appreciate these podcasters who don't. Thank you. It's a great podcast.
Just a heads up, if we ever release a outtakes, don't listen to that because, oh man, mistakes happen all the time. We cut them out and,
especially
if rated PG-13.
We're going to say something like anecdotal diatribe.
I don't even know what a diatribe is, but I need to be a part of that clan.
I don't think it's diet.
I know. I was trying to be funny, Jamie. Okay. Golly.
That wasn't a fat joke. All right, John, we've got a good one here today. And really for the rest of this year, we've got some really strong content putting out those extra Christmas true crime to goes on Mondays. So without further ado, get us rolling on today's case.
Going to go back to my favorite decade, and that is the 90s. On December 15th, 1997, a fire broke out in a row house in Willingboro, New Jersey, and that is a suburb of Philadelphia. It was in the home of Luz Cuevas and Pedro Vera. At the time, Luz was home with two older children and her 10-day-old baby girl, Delamar Vera, asleep in her crib. Now, neighbors heard Luz in the street screaming, "My baby, my baby," and this was in Spanish. Her older children made it out of the house, but the baby was still upstairs. A neighbor's son tried to go into the home, but could not recover the baby. Luz tried to get back in herself, but could not find Delamar in her room. Luz was overcome by smoke and burns to her face and eventually had to flee the burning house. Delamar Vera was nowhere to be found. Dude, my heart just sank saying all that. I mean, this is a parent's worst nightmare.
Yeah, I hear people ask all the time, if your house were burning down, what's the one thing you would go in and grab? And people don't even mention their family members because that's assumed. That's first. Family members, loved ones, make sure everybody's out. And it's, I don't know, you're risking your own life, obviously, going in. And a lot of times firefighters, if they're there, will prevent you from going in. But you don't know where the baby is.
I would like to say in my mind, I'm not leaving the house until I know everybody's safe. But at the same time, I've never been in that situation. And it's, you know, I've stand too close to a campfire and it's unbearable. So I don't know what your body would instinctually do in that situation.
Well, and there's the just the, I don't know,
smoke.
And there are different people. So I may assume my wife has the baby if we all run outside and somebody just forgot. So it's terrifying. Actually, a few years ago, my parents' house burned down.
Oh, yeah. And it was around this time of year, too, wasn't it?
It was around this time of year. And their conversations around, my mom was essentially in a back room, and there was so much smoke she couldn't see. She had to feel around for my dad's hand as they were yelling to each other and then get out of the house.
And
they had minutes to do so.
Yeah, I feel so bad for your parents. They didn't lose anybody in the fire, but the stuff they lost that was sentimental. Yeah. Like, I'll talk to your mom and dad when they're here for birthday parties and ask a random question, and your dad will say, "No, I'm sorry, we lost that in the fire."
Yeah.
So it's like something that never goes away. But again, we're talking about a child in this story.
Absolutely. And they did come. They were able to put the fire out, but they did not find Delamar or even her remains. The official cause of the fire was determined to be an overheated extension cord that was attached to a space heater. Again, this was 1997. I think even then people were starting to be really cautious of space heaters and the dangers that they cause. But I mean, you can still use them responsibly, but they are something you have to keep an eye on. Police who came into the scene concluded that baby Delamar's remains were still inside the house, but that they had been incinerated in the fire. And that's the thing about fire. It gets so hot that it's not, yes, the smoke can kill you, the fire can kill you, it destroys things, but it makes things disappear. And for it to get hot enough to incinerate bone and things like that, it has to be a really hot fire. And they assume that's what happened. Because there were no remains, there was never a burial or even a funeral service held for the baby, because Luz never fully believed that her daughter died in the fire. She held out hope that her baby was somewhere alive and safe. And she claims that there were two separate occasions where she ran into the burning home, went in the baby's room, and the baby wasn't there in the crib. She ran back in twice, and the baby had been in the crib earlier. So if she wasn't in the crib, then there's still a chance that she was somewhere outside of the house safe. And she couldn't explain why the window was open of the baby's bedroom, despite how cold of a night it was. So sounds like they ruled it an accidental fire, but also the baby's missing and her window was open. It sounds like if those are two separate incidents, that's really coincidental, but I don't know. It certainly could be tied together as well.
More evidence that gave Luz and Pedro hope included the fact that officers found bone fragments that they believed to be baby Delamar's, but then tests later showed them to be non-human. So, man, just a punch in the gut. If you think that you found your kid, you know what happened, but then those aren't, you know, that test comes back to be it's not your child, and you still really have no idea what happened.
But it still reinstates the hope that maybe the baby's alive. That's so true. Very much a roller coaster.
That's
here.
True. When investigators returned to the scene of the fire, firemen had already dumped several hundred pounds of debris from the baby's bedroom into the backyard. Officers sifted through that debris and found wool particles, and they believed to have found human ashes. They thought the wool particles were human ashes. The problem is bodies typically burn to ash after being burned at 1,000 degrees for an hour or longer. But on average, a house fire only reaches about 600 degrees, so 400 degrees less than what it takes to burn ashes, and the bodies have to be burned at that temperature for an hour. But this house fire was contained after approximately 15 minutes, so not hot enough and not anywhere close to the amount of time needed to basically turn a body into ash.
Right.
However, there were also no indications of arson or kidnapping. This is just really turning into a huge mystery.
Yeah, it sounds just like the baby Delamar disappeared, which is scary in and of itself. After the fire, Luz and Pedro moved several times. They ended up having another baby. This was a baby boy named Samuel. Pedro worked as a car mechanic and a stock boy at a Dollar Tree store. Luz stayed home with the baby and her two older sons that had escaped the fire earlier on. One of Pedro's co-workers at the Dollar Tree remembers Pedro and said he never thought his baby had died in the fire. Like Luz, he had hope that the baby was alive somewhere. In fact, he believed, and as did Luz, that Delamar had been kidnapped and that the fire was set on purpose as a distraction, but it was set so well that authorities would rule it an accident. And a landlord the couple also had remembers that the couple would often talk about Delamar and that they believed that she was alive somewhere and held out hope that they would see her again. But eventually the relationship of Luz and Pedro would start to drift apart and they ultimately split up in December of 2002.
In January of 2004, January 24th, 2004, Pedro's sister Evelyn was throwing a birthday party for her 3-year-old granddaughter. And Evelyn invited Luz since their kids were relatives. She also invited Carolyn Correa, Evelyn and Pedro's cousin, who was like a sister to Evelyn. Now, Correa brought along her 5-year-old daughter, Alea. When Luz first saw Alea, she was struck by the little girl's dimples. In her mind, she thought they looked just like the ones of the baby that she had lost, their 10-year-old baby Delamar. Now, Alea also looked a lot like Luz's other children. You know, in my mind, I'm thinking, you've lost a baby. Like, in your mind, any kid who's going to be about that age, it's going to hit you different, right?
I would think so.
She said that the dimples looked like her kid's dimples before she disappeared, and, you know, she looks like her other children. So 31-year-old Luz had a feeling and then hatched a plan. She called over this little girl. She told her that she had gum in her hair, and she offered to fix it for her. Luz said that she remembered a crime show that she watched where someone collected hair for a DNA sample. So Luz took 5 strands of this child's hair and put it in a napkin.
She definitely had been watching CSI and was trying to take it into her own hands here. And, you know, that's tough. That's a relative of yours that you're essentially, in the back of your mind, you've convinced yourself that somebody in your family kidnapped your baby.
I have so many questions, like, how obviously you're not close enough to her parents to know that they weren't pregnant, but then all of a sudden there's a baby, you know?
Yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's, you know, they're close in that they are relatives, but obviously they're not super close. Or maybe there's a huge backstory, like she was adopted. If we got her in foster, I don't know, who knows?
Yeah. Or maybe she lost the baby at the time. And yeah, I mean, there are so many things that could have happened, but so many unknowns. After the party, Luz went to the office of State Representative Angel Cruz and told him her story. Cruz believed Luz and felt like this was something that needed to be followed up on, so he actually went to law enforcement in Philadelphia, who then went to law enforcement in New Jersey, because anytime you're in like a border town like that, jurisdiction gets weird, obviously. The police ended up launching an investigation, and they did go on to use the hair to perform DNA tests. Before the results were in, officials took Alea into state custody. So, John, what evidence would they have had to have here to take possession of the child without any kind of scientific proof that this was their kid? Because this seems like, for even the representative to take this seriously, seems odd to me. What did she have to say to convince them?
Yeah, it's, dude, anything I say would be speculation. These records, you know, if I get arrested, it's public knowledge, but family court records are sealed because it's involving minors. Right. So we don't know what happened, but I do know there has to be more to this story, because they would never just pull a child away from their mom because of an allegation. So they had something to go off of. We don't know what.
Right. And they, like I said, sent Alea into state custody while they awaited the DNA test results. John, when they came back, it proved that Alea was indeed Luz's child, Delamar Vera. That's when the truth started to come out about what really happened that night. When we take a break, we're going to dive into what actually happened that night to Delamar and how everybody was held accountable for this crime.
From the creators of True Crime Cast comes Paradigm, a 9-part exclusive on the Lillilid family murders.
While they were at a rest area on Interstate 81, a group of teenagers carjacked the family.
We believe, and I still believe, that it was satanic.
That's when they were carjacked and driven to Baileyton, where they were shot and left in a ditch.
A clarification made by the Supreme Court opens the possibility now of parole for 2 of the 6 people convicted in the Lillilid murders.
It could have been anywhere, it just happened to be here.
Every good story has 3 sides.
The prosecution, the defense, and the truth.
My name is Jamie Boggs.
And I'm John Bailey. And as a Tennessee native, I want to know what really went down in the place where I grew up. This is Paradigm.
Be sure to binge Paradigm. That's Paradigm. Wherever you listen to podcasts.
Accounts and timelines differ slightly in the retelling of this story, but it appears the story goes a little bit like this. So the day before the fire, Correa stopped by Luz and Pedro's apartment, asking for Pedro, which again was her cousin, to come outside and to look at their car because they were having brake problems. Now, this was a bit odd and out of nowhere, because Luz and Pedro said that this woman had never visited their house before this day, so for her to just stop by and say, hey, can you look at my brakes? That's weird. That's out of nowhere. And reportedly, she bonded with Luz and said that she had also recently had a baby. Now, according to the Tampa Bay Times, Correa had given birth to her own child, but shortly before the day that she visited them, the baby was reportedly stillborn. So she had a child, but it didn't survive. So she made this trip just really soon after that, knowing that she basically told a lie. Well, she told a half truth, right?
Yeah. I mean, what she said was true, but it certainly was not the whole truth and was certainly intentionally deceptive.
So Correa came back to the house the next day. She claimed that she had forgot her purse there and wanted to run back in and get it. And shortly after she left is when the fire started. So, Jamie, you mentioned, or you asked earlier, what basis would the state have to take custody of this kid? And if we know, if there's an investigation and we now know that she had a stillborn child and now she has a child, where did she get it from?
Right.
So that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes it pretty clear. And obviously just the oddity of her stopping by. And a lot of people believe that the loss of the baby, which is one of the most traumatic things somebody can experience, kind of triggered a delusion in Correa's brain, making her believe that Delmar was her baby. She felt like she had grown close to the baby during that brief visit and believed it was hers. After Correa took Delmar into the house, she raised her as her own for 6 years, like we said earlier, calling her Alea. She had three other children who believed that Alea was their little sister. As far as they knew, she brought home this 10-day-old baby, and it was their sibling. She also had a boyfriend at the time who believed that Alea was his daughter. So when I think about Correa planning this out, I just assumed there would be multiple people involved, that maybe she handed the baby out a window to somebody and started the fire on her way out, but it sounds like it was mostly her undertaking. This father, or person who thought he was the father, wanted to be able to visit Alea more, so he asked for a paternity test to prove that he was the father. The test results came back showing that he was not the father. And obviously this started raising questions for everybody around of, if he's not the father, who is, and what other things don't we know about this child?
After the DNA proved Alea was not Correa's either, police went back to her New Jersey home to arrest her. But when they arrived, Correa had fled, and she abandoned her three children there. Now, days later, she surrendered herself to the police. She was charged with the following. It was kidnapping, arson, assault, concealing the whereabouts of a child, and interfering with the custody of a child. As authorities continued to investigate, they found that she had a prior criminal record. And this is interesting, man. In 1998, she was sentenced to 5 years probation. She had set a fire in a Hamilton, New Jersey medical office where she had worked as a billing clerk.
And this was after she had set the fire and kidnapped Delmar.
Yeah, so she had stolen and cashed company checks and was trying to destroy the physical evidence, so she did so by setting that fire. They also learned that Correa had a baby with her current husband, Brian Bisardo, and the baby was a baby girl, was born with a heart defect, and died a few hours after she was born. Correa had also had two previous miscarriages. So this is a woman who, yes, she has a criminal record, but the trauma of losing all these children is unimaginable. I cannot put myself in her shoes to understand even a fraction of what she's feeling.
Her mental and emotional state had to be all over the place. According to one of Correa's friends, when she found out about the DNA test results for Alea, she broke down and she started saying, "Where's my baby? I thought for 6 years that Alea was my baby. If Alea is not my baby, then who has mine?" So like we said earlier, it was like she convinced herself that this was her baby and that she hadn't kidnapped it. Luz, on the other hand, was obviously thrilled to find out that her baby was alive when she got these DNA results. Yes, she had missed out on 6 years of her life, but she was alive and she would get to be reunited with her. And just 2 weeks after this DNA test, the six-year-old girl was sent back to live with Luz and resumed her birth name of Delmar. Pedro wanted to be at the reunion, but Luz had custody technically, and Pedro wasn't given an opportunity to see his daughter until the next day. I'm sure that was controversial. Most custody issues like this end up being so. I kind of think after 6 years of thinking your baby had died in a fire that maybe you would overlook that, but I'm not in that position.
Well, and you know, if you're listening to this quickly and you don't really process it, then this all sounds like there's a bow on this. It's a happy ending. But really, for the sake of Delmar, that's not the case. Well, there's a lot of issues that go along with that. But, I mean, I work with foster kids for a living, right? I mean, you take a six-year-old out of the only home they've ever known and place them with somebody else, and that's traumatic in and of itself. Even though the people that she was placed with is her biological mother, it's still not the family that she's used to. So yeah, it's just very hard to... It's not going to be a happy instant switch in Delmar's mind is what I'm trying to say.
No, you're right. One of my children that I adopted through foster care came to us when he was five. That's been several years, and we're still working through some of those issues. Now, I'm not his biological father, and he knows that. He's not going to find out on this podcast. But, yeah, it's going to be There's a lot of transition there generally, but there were some other issues that made this challenging, right?
Yeah, Delamar didn't speak Spanish, and Luz spoke very little English. So you have your child with you, but you can't communicate because you speak two different languages. A University of Vermont professor of psychiatry said the following: an unusual and tragic situation like this shakes the very core of a child's sense of stability and predictability of the world around them. They've grown up in a family they think is their own, and they have a home and a school and friends, and suddenly everything they believe about their life suddenly is turned upside down, end quote. I think that's probably a more eloquent way of saying what I was just trying to say is this child's whole life was stripped away and has to, it's like hitting reset on your life. And that's not an easy process.
And also her parents were thrilled, or Luz was thrilled, to have her back in the home. So you are being essentially torn away from the family that you've known your entire life and being placed with, to you, this person that's a stranger, and they could not be more excited to have you there. So the contrast of the, I guess, the emotional state of Luz and Delamar just adds another wrinkle.
Well, and like you said, I mean, I think it's understated that Luz and Pedro, not only are they not together, but they are certainly not on good terms. So you go from a two-parent home to a one-parent home. You know, it's just a lot of differences. And Luz and Pedro refused to speak publicly about the situation, and they threw insults at one another through the media. It's just, I don't know. It's a good thing that she's reunited, but it's not picture perfect.
And to note that, there are all kinds of studies that talk about, and this was part of the training for being a foster parent. I know you're in that world every day of being with your birth family is the best place for you to develop and reach your full potential and be who you were born to be. So this is anytime you see something where somebody is sent to their birth family, I mean, that's why that is scientifically proven to be the best place for them. Of course, pending their safety. And Delamar, the person that she thought was her mother her entire life, Correa, faced decades in prison. So now that police are in the middle of this, they have to start looking into other theories and other, ideas about this situation. Because like I said earlier, it seems like this was more than a one-person job. Authorities believe that somebody must have helped Correa steal this child. And if you ask Luz, she's going to tell you that Pedro and his family were involved in this abduction and said Pedro never wanted to have Delamar to begin with. He didn't want a new baby in the home. He knew that his cousin Correa had lost the baby. So Luz believes that Pedro had helped fix his problem and his cousin's problem by staging this fire and giving Delamar over to Correa. Pedro would deny this publicly. He denied it privately. He said, this is never the case. This is my daughter. Prosecutors say that no matter what they believe, there's not enough evidence to make a case against Pedro or anybody else for that matter. All their evidence simply points directly to Correa and nobody else. And I'm sure if something comes out later to show that somebody else was involved and to prove that, we'll see further prosecution, but at this time, everything here is falling on Correa.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, if we even began to speculate that Pedro was involved in this, I don't think that's reasonable. But at the same time, it's not outside the realm of possibilities. I mean, she did stop by for his assistance with the breaks, and she had never really been to the house before. So I don't think it's unreasonable for Luz to at least wonder if there's more to that story. Now, Correa was placed on a $1 million bail, and she entered a plea of no contest and was ultimately found guilty of kidnapping, arson, and attempted murder. She was sentenced to 9 to 30 years in prison back in 2005, and the judge said that it was clear that she suffered from depression, but was more manipulative than delusional, saying, "You robbed a small girl a very great deal. So, man, just this is one of the wildest crimes we've ever covered.
It really is. And that's saying something. You mentioned it's not out of the realm of possibility for Pedro to be involved. I think that would be the most believable part of the scenario. Now, Correa came up for parole back in 2014, but as far as our research shows, she was not released and she remains in prison. She remains convinced that the girl that she raised, that the DNA proved was Delamar, is actually her daughter, Alea. And I would think that if she's looking to get out of prison, a lot of times those parole boards want you to admit what you did and say you were sorry for it. And to her, she believes this whole thing is a lie, that she was raising her daughter. She even went and paid an independent lab to conduct another DNA test in hopes of showing that this was her birth daughter. But of course, this DNA test showed that she was in fact Delamar and not Correa's daughter, Alea. Her lawyer says that this is proof that she really believes her story, that she was, I guess that what the attorney's trying to say here is she was more delusional than manipulative. If she didn't think she was the mother, why would she spend hundreds of dollars for this DNA test knowing that it wasn't hers? So not sure if that's a ploy to, I don't know, move towards some kind of adjustment to her sentence based on mental health, to a different facility or whatever, but if she really did that, it makes some sense.
Yeah, and, you know, I think your brain can do some powerful things that is unexplainable. And if you've raised this kid for that long and in your mind she's replaced the daughter that you've lost, then maybe in her mind she really does think that this child is hers. But your beliefs don't outweigh reality. So today, Delamar is on social media and appears to be a happy and well-adjusted adult. She was married this year in October of 23. So from the outside looking in, it doesn't seem to have slowed her down any. She seems to be doing great, but you know, I don't know, based on what I do for my job and what I've seen over the last decade and a half of doing so, there's going to be a piece of her that is going to remember that for sure. And hopefully there's been a lot of interventions in place over the years to try to reconcile that.
But the impact of Correa's actions are not over by any stretch of the imagination on any of the lives that she impacted through her arson and kidnapping of essentially her cousin, of her cousin's child, who would also be her cousin. So a wild crime that thankfully nobody was killed in this fire, which absolutely could have happened. It caused a ton of damage and like we mentioned about my parents, the loss of memories and items that meant a great deal to you. Thankfully nobody was killed, but those are 6 years of trauma to lose Delamar and everybody else in that family that can never be taken back. So I think they're going to continue to be long-term effects, but super thrilled to see that Delamar is doing well. Hopefully Correa is getting the help she needs, but I think she needs to continue to be held accountable for this.
Absolutely. Man, this one feels like I'm at work. So I'm glad to call this one done. But this is a fascinating story, and you know, it is a happy ending. This mama got her kid back, and that's the best news we could have got.
Yeah, and we often don't get to make that report. So super thrilled that one of the few cases that we've covered recently that did have somewhat of a happy ending. I promised several weeks ago I would be reading 5-star reviews that were written for Paradigm, which is our long-form investigative podcast that we put out season one of a month or so ago. More updates coming on that. There are some hearings in the coming weeks. We're going to provide bonus content for it. But this comes from Ridiculous Patroness One. Said, wow, this podcast shocked me with how great it is. Literally seemed like you're listening to a Netflix special. If you're into case files and detail telling of a crime, this podcast is a must add to your playlist. Entertaining and suspenseful from beginning to end. Great hosts and interviews on this show. Looking forward to more. This comes from the Wild One NF33. This says, you guys did it again. Always amazing. Thank you. And just one more here from Julia Reed. This is such a wonderful deep dive into the case, and John and Jamie, let you decide for yourself if anything should be changed in the case. And again, there are things that may be changed in this case in the coming weeks, and we'll keep everyone posted. One other housekeeping note, we were on last Friday's episode of Talk is Jericho, talking about Robert Picton, a serial killer from Canada, And we covered that years ago here on True Crime Cast, but talking to Chris Jericho about that, he had maybe a run-in with this killer after we started digging into the details of where he was when and how that overlapped with Chris's travels. So certainly some fascinating additions to that case over there. But we appreciate you guys, and we'll be back on Friday with another case of true crime to go.
Guys, we love you. And until next crime, this has been True Crime Cast.
You've listened to True Crime Cast, distributed by Stoveleg Media. Check out Stoveleg.com to find out more about your hosts and to find other podcasts to listen to. Stoveleg Media, igniting conversation.